Hi, I'm Jamila Bordone, and I am just honored to have special guests here this morning. And Ramona Africa is here, and she is here with Megha Milbourne, who is a supporter of the MOVE organization, and she is also part of Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal. In case you don't know who Ramona Africa is, oh, amazing.
Shame on you.
Ramona Africa is the sole adult survivor of the May 13th, 1985 massacre of 11 members of the MOVE organization. The FBI and the city of Philadelphia dropped a C4 bomb on MOVE 16-6221 Osage Avenue home in West Philadelphia, carrying the young Birdie Africa, the other only survivor with her. Ramona dodged gunfire and escaped from the fire with permanent scarring from the burns. And I just want to... I'm here to listen and learn. And so can you describe how you felt when that was happening and what the experience was and what the outcome was?
Well, first of all, let me say, you know, I am not somebody that dropped out of the heavens as a strong revolutionary, you know. I mean, I was raised in a middle-class family. I went to Catholic school for 12 years, you know. I had never, ever been arrested in my life before coming to MOVE. I didn't know anything about revolution for real. I read certain material, read certain books, but I didn't know anything about revolution. So for me or anybody else to say that you could go through a situation like that and not be afraid, not be terrified, you know, is an absolute lie, or you're crazy, one or the other. It was an extremely frightening, terrifying situation. I had never experienced anything like that before in my life. You don't think you're ever going to survive an attack like that. I mean, we didn't know initially that they had dropped the bomb. We felt, you know, like a shaking, but we didn't know exactly what was going on there. Our focus mainly, the adults, was on the children and the animals. And they had poured so much tear gas in our house that initially we thought that the smoke was tear gas smoke, but it just kept getting heavier and heavier, and then it started getting extremely hot in here. And we started realizing that something else was going on here. And we immediately, once we realized that the house was on fire, immediately tried to get ourselves, our children, our animals, out of that blazing inferno, only to be immediately met with a barrage of police gunfire. You know, this is what we want people to understand clearly. We don't want any misinterpretations about this. What happened in May of 85 was not, I repeat, not an attempt to arrest. This was a straight up plan to murder, to exterminate. They did not intend for anybody to survive that attack. I mean, they dropped a bomb on our home, a row house in the middle of the city. And when that bomb ignited a fire, which they were immediately aware of, they made a conscious, deliberate decision to let that fire burn. Now, what situation do you know of, does anybody know of, where firefighters who swear their lives away to put out fires and save lives, who run into burning buildings to save lives, when have you ever known them to make a decision to let a fire burn, let a building burn, knowing that men, women, babies, animals are in that building? Innocent men, women, babies, animals. We hadn't been convicted of anything. Had not been convicted of anything. And weren't even charged with anything serious at that point. I mean, we weren't charged with murder, rape, robbery, selling drugs, or kidnap, or, I mean, nothing like that. you know, disturbing the peace, you know, things like that that they just made up, you know. So what I'm saying is that day was terrifying. And I guess the most terrifying part of the whole thing, or most impacting part of the whole thing, was to know that these people just deliberately murdered my family, including babies.
Right.
You know, a supporter contacted me the other day and was saying he wanted to respond to an old time magazine article that he had come across, saying that back in the 70s, MOVE people refused to let license and inspection come in our house and inspect, and that we threatened to kill our children if they tried to come in. And he asked me if that was true. And I said, first of all, no, it's not true. Second of all, why would it be true? What would make us think that threatening to kill our babies would stop them from doing anything? They don't care about babies. You know, look at what happened in Vietnam in the My Lai massacre. Look what's happening in Iraq right now. Look what happened in Grenada. Look what happened in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I mean, they bombed two cities, not military bases, but cities. And the effects of that were felt decades later. They didn't just bomb, like I said, military installations. Children, women, non-military people were bombed. So what would make us think that saying something like that would stop them? And furthermore, they want to accuse MOVE of threatening, we're talking about words here, threatening to kill our babies. They actually killed our babies, not only in May of 85, but in the 70s, in the decade of the 70s, when they beat, stomped, kicked pregnant MOVE women into miscarriage, when they deliberately, cops trampled to death a three-week-old MOVE baby. And they want to say that MOVE threatened to kill our babies? If that is so such an abomination, then why don't they feel that actually burning our babies alive is an abomination? Not one single person, not one single official was ever even charged with anything in terms of May 13th of 1985 bombing our family, killing our babies.
Never even charged. Yeah. I want to sort of get back to that in a minute, but I do want to discuss the reason you're in Portland this evening. And there is a benefit tonight at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street. And so I think people will hear more about your case and what's going on there. And so can you speak more on that?
Okay. And I'm also going to be at PSU, Portland State University, this afternoon at 1 o'clock. I'm very, very glad of the opportunity to come out to Portland. It's not my first time here. I've been here several other times. But it's always a pleasure to come back here. The reception that we get is always very warm, you know, and we do feel like it's extremely important for people to hear about MOVE from MOVE. People hear about MOVE from everybody else, you know. So people need to hear about MOVE from MOVE and see us face to face, you know. I mean, it's one thing for this media to demonize somebody or an organization and people never meet or talk to or see those people, it leaves them with a certain image in their head, which causes people to be apathetic and feel like when the government attacks us that, oh, it must be justified. I mean, that's those crazy people that they said did this, that, and the other. You know, so it is very important to us and very important for people to have that contact with MOVE personally so that people can see for themselves and not be victimized by the press, by this government not manipulating, because it's a very willing press, you know, to paint a certain picture of us. So what we're going to be talking about tonight and this afternoon is we're going to be telling people who MOVE really is, what we represent, what we truly believe in, and we're going to be connecting the dots, because MOVE's founder, John Africa, have taught MOVE people the necessity of total revolution. Mm-hmm. You see, revolution is not simply fighting cops or going to court, you know? Mm-hmm. Revolution starts with self. It starts with how you think, and therefore dictates how you live. Mm-hmm. You know, that's true revolution. Because while babies are born revolutionaries, all they know is what's right. And if something is wrong, whether it's a wet diaper, hungry, gas pains, or whatever, babies will holler and scream and protest mm-hmm. until you get it right.
That's right.
And they won't stop. That is revolution.
Yeah.
As babies get older, they are coerced and intimidated and trained by this system through their parents to stop doing that, to let that go, and to compromise and accept wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, John Africa have taught MOVE people the true meaning of revolution and how it's total. You know, it affects every aspect of our lives. The same enemy that the homeless are fighting, that people who fight for health care for people are fighting, that people who work in, you know, education are fighting, that people who work for political prisoners are fighting, anti-death penalty people are fighting. It's one enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It's one enemy. It's a handful of people that control not just the United States, but the world,
mm-hmm.
the world. And those are the people that pull the strings and are responsible for everything that we complain about, animal rights, environmental issues. You know, it's one enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we must be unified. Everybody doesn't have to and is not going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody is obligated to do something, to do whatever it is that you can do,
mm-hmm.
you know, because this is not an individual fight. It's not one group's fight. This is all of our fights. We're all being affected
yeah.
by those who are running this system. And I mean, MOVE personally does not want to see any more babies being bombed and burned alive. We don't want to see any more Sean Bells being mm-hmm. shot and killed 50 times, you know, the day of his wedding, because
mm-hmm.
it happened in the wee hours of that morning. Right. So it was the day of his wedding. You know, we don't want to see another Mumia Abu-Jamal mm-hmm. sitting in prison on death row for over 25 years, like mm-hmm. 26 years now,
yeah.
27 years. You know, this December, despite his innocence,
right.
you know, we don't want to see anybody else's family sitting in prison 30 years like our family, facing 100-year max for a crime they didn't commit,
mm-hmm.
you know, and have the parole board tell them, well, no, we're not paroling you because you refuse to accept responsibility for your crime. What crime? MOVE has been telling them for 30 years that we are innocent, that we didn't commit no crime. And even their records showed that it was physically impossible for MOVE to have killed James Ramp, police mm-hmm. officer James Ramp. Mm-hmm. And they know that. But they're going to tell our family, we're not paroling you because you won't accept responsibility. I mean, first of all, parole is not about accepting responsibility. That happened during the trial.
Mm-hmm.
They convicted you. The judge sentenced you. The only issue now is your prison conduct, your prison record, mm-hmm. and your home plan and or job plan. That's the issue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they're basically resentencing people, you know. Mm-hmm. Once the judge gave you that minimum, despite any serious problems in prison, fights and all that stuff, then you are supposed to be paroled. But anyway, you know, this is what John Africa is teaching us, the meaning and necessity of total revolution. And that's why MOVE can work with people from all different kinds of organizations, whatever their area is that they have chosen to focus on, whether it's animal rights, the environment, political prisoners, the death penalty, or whatever. We can work with all of them, you know. We don't have tunnel vision and think that, you know, just one way, one, you know, area is the area. Mm-hmm. They all need attention. But the important part of it, the foundation of revolution, has to be unity and understanding that it's all important and that we all need to work together and support each other. You know, do what we can to support each other. There's plenty of work to go around.
Yes.
You know, we don't need to be discouraging anybody from doing any kind of work.
And you do have a supporter here, Mega Milbourne. So how did you get involved with supporting MOVE? And we have about 13 minutes, so.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having us here. You know, I grew up kind of similar to Mona, in upper middle class, you know, primarily white community, and I could see injustice happening, could feel injustice happening, but I couldn't really put my finger on the interconnectedness until, you know, I had the privilege of hearing MOVE people speak, came across MOVE information, and I personally made the choice to make, you know, my life dedicated to, you know, fighting for revolution, to being as close as I could to the MOVE organization and working alongside, because of what Mona's talking about, because of the understanding of the interconnectedness of these issues, that these aren't disparate, distinct issues. They all hinge on oppression, you know, be it prejudice against animals, be it prejudice against people. There's the same underlying prejudice that needs to be fought at. And like Mona's talking about, coming from a background with all of its trappings, I feel that as a white woman, really my best opportunity to try and work to shed, you know, some of the superiorities, all of these things that come with being raised the way I was, is to be in MOVE and to be looking at myself and the training within myself and working to focus on justice and equality and making myself as committed and loyal a member of this revolution as I can. And I, you know, I'm so thankful to have some of the best teachers on the planet in Ramona Africa
and
John Africa and in members of the MOVE 9. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel incredibly close to these people because of their dedication to all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, the MOVE 9, as Mumia Abu-Jamal says all the time, are some of the most gifted teachers you could ever come across in your life. You know, you don't go to prison and feel that you're in the midst of somebody who's been jaded and broken. You're in the midst of somebody who sees prison as an activity, sees it as an opportunity to continue teaching, sees it as an opportunity to continue fighting, and understands that, you know, with a cross over top, it'd be a church. With, you know, hospital trappings, it'd be a hospital. It's simply a building. It doesn't dictate, you know, MOVE members' belief. You know, it's just a building. And so they're some of the freest, most liberated people I've ever met. And as Mona was talking about, the situation with parole is really dire. We've been getting, as a MOVE supporter, that's one of, you know, my primary focuses at this time is pushing for the parole of the MOVE 9. And we've been getting letters in support of parole from as far as Peru, Germany, Turkey, Mexico. And people have been so eloquent and articulate about how the example of the MOVE 9 has been inspiring and motivating to them. There's an incredible woman in Mexico City, Carolina, who's one of our main contacts. She works very closely with the Zapatistas, with the workers in Oaxaca. You know, she's been instrumental in doing solidarity work with so many of the political prisoners who were just released in Mexico. And she, you know, translates a lot of our literature into Spanish. She just makes sure that Mumia and MOVE 9 are present and that connection is made and informs us so we can do the same and continue the solidarity Mona was speaking about with her. And some of the letters we've been receiving from Mexico, of course, the perspective of so many of the people there is just so clear. And they're just really like handing, you know, the parole boards derrieres to them. You know, I don't know what I can say on this radio, but, you know, they really are just saying everything you're speaking about, all the justice, so-called justice and fairness and equality you proclaim is so clearly exposed in what you're doing to these people. And they feel that connection. The first people who were denied parole were the women of the Move 9. And people were outraged because it is an outrage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is unbelievable what these people have been through. They are innocent and they should be free. And so we ask people to continue writing the parole board. They've now been given, they've all been denied except for two. Dell and Phil have not seen the parole board. They were told that they're indefinitely not going to see the parole board, mm-hmm. which of course is also illegal and unprecedented, but what's new, right? And so everybody else has gotten a 1-year hit. So for us, this is 1 year to really put energy into this because it's a strategic area for people to focus on, mm-hmm. regardless of what area you've chosen to put your attention towards. Like Mona was saying, if we can get people who are eligible for parole released, that will thicken our ranks to then push for those who aren't eligible, like Mumia Abu-Jamal, like Leonard Peltier, like so many others. But there are so many people we're finding who are being held hostage by the parole boards, not due to guilt or innocence, but simply due to politics. The FOP's pressure, in the case of the Move 9, they were talking
about the Fraternal Order of Police.
Thank you. Yeah, in the case of the Move 9, they said it came from the district attorney's office, but I mean, one and the same. Sundiata Kohli was eligible for parole 10 years ago. Sekou Odinga, Veranza Bowers, so many of these people have been eligible for parole and are being held hostage. Mm-hmm. And that's unacceptable. And the work of MOVE, really, as I see it, is to set an example so that people can see, you know, what is available to them to resist. Because this system is oppressing people across the board. But we need to find a way that we can survive, a way that we can pull together, a way that we can continue resisting. And, you know, before the show, Jamila, you and I were speaking a little bit about, you know, some of the examples that MOVE has set and ways that people are able to respond to it. Mm-hmm. The example people have set in the prison has enabled so many inmates to survive because they've seen MOVE continue to thrive and continue to be strong. I was actually surprised when we were in Spain a few years back to find that a lot of the squatters saw the 1978 siege on MOVE's headquarters as an inspiration for squatters' movements because they saw the way that people collected rainwater, the way that people survived without electricity and other civilized, you know, ways of living, and saw that that was an example of resistance that they could use to motivate themselves in their struggle where they were. And that's exactly what our work is to do. The same thing is, you know, happening with what's happening right now in Portland with the homeless community. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really insane that these people are being criminalized the way they are, especially when these people have so much of the wisdom and experience of being able to survive without the trappings of civilization. They should be listened to and honored and worked with and not criminalized. And we're in full support of the work that they are doing.
Yeah, because it's just so backward and insulting. I mean, a homeless person shouldn't be treated like a criminal. Mm-hmm. The person that has two or three homes, you know, and refuses to help people. Churches who have all that space and the churches close 80% of the time, you know, they're the ones that should be treated like criminals for not availing themselves, making themselves available to the homeless and helping. I mean, that's the crime, you know, and this is something that really galls the system and causes those running the system to really want to exterminate MOVE because we don't look at things like most people look at things, you know. We just look at things very simply and clearly. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we really want people to understand that's very important is we have to really think for ourselves. Mm-hmm. We cannot afford to allow those running this system to shape and form and dictate how we think. You know, I mean, we have to break out of that prison. We have to look outside the box, because if we start from where they want us to start to, then we're doomed. I mean, they throw that word legal out there and say, well, you acted illegally or this is the law. What do we care about that? Slavery was the law. Apartheid was the law. Holocaust was the law, you know. But did it make it right? Those who resisted that and revolted against those things were seen as illegal, as criminals, as wrong. But were they wrong? No. No. You know, and in this country, that word legal, I mean, what should it mean to people? Because every 4th of July, the very officials who want to throw that word legal and illegal down your throat, they support and idealize and just make heroes out of people like Paul Revere, Nathan Hale, you know, George Washington. These people who they say broke the law, went to war with the government, the King of England, King George at the time, went to war with cops called redcoats. And every year they celebrate them as heroes. Well, what makes Nathan Hale a hero for defying legality and going to war and makes Mumia Abu-Jamal, you know, a Delbert Africa, you know, a Janine Africa, a Leonard Peltier, urban terrorist. I mean, the idea, the very idea that they would call an indigenous person of this country like Leonard Peltier a murderer, I can't get past that. I don't want to hear what happened on the Pine Ridge Reservation in June of what, 1970 or whatever year it was. I don't even want to hear it. You're not going to convince me to call an indigenous person a murderer when it is the ancestors of these people who want to call him a murderer that slaughtered Leonard's people into virtual extinction. And you want me to overlook that and call him a murderer? You know, I mean, we have to start thinking for ourselves. We have to start thinking outside the box that these people have created for us. That's what John Africa taught MOVE to do.
In a couple of senses, because we have about a minute and a half, I wanted to get back to your first point, because using the connections between animal rights and all of these are, you know, how can you say that you're black and are, those are just white issues? So in like a sentence or two, can you?
Well, in one sentence, really, the very mentality that causes white America, the white world, to look at blacks or people of color as inferior is the same mentality that has humans looking at animals as inferior. We all breathe the same air, drink the same water. The mother of life did not make one water for animals, another water for humans, another water for white humans, different. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. There ain't but one race, one species, and that's the species of life, the race of life. And all life comes from one source, and that means we're equal. We are all equal.
Thank you. I want to thank you both so much for being here with me. And had Mega Milborn, supporter of MOVE organization and part of Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal, and Ramona Africa, who is going to be at Clinton Street Theater tonight, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, 7 p.m. and at PSU at 1 p.m. today. Thank you so much for being here with me.
Thank you. And long live MOVE, long live revolution, long live John Africa.